So the topic of my talk is on aesthetic practices of residing, and basically I mean just living in a home, having a home, creating a home by residing. And let's move on. So I'll just very briefly start by a bit of background info because it gives a bit of context to what I do. So my background is in research of architecture history and urban and cultural landscapes, and also sociology and media studies. And in the past, I've been quite interested in this notion or concept of restorative environments. And I did my thesis on environmental preferences and this idea of restorative environments, which means places or milieus that can somehow restore a person. And that relates to this idea of engagement, embodiment, and effort in the environment. So basically how we are always embedded in the environment as an actor, so we don't just receive perceptions or we don't simply observe in passive ways. We're always engaged in different actions and react to affordances or take advantage of those, or want to sort of imprint our own mark in the world as well. And lately I've been more and more interested in the idea of the home and homeliness, so the philosophy of the home in a way that what does it mean? And obviously when we talk about a home, it could mean many things. So it could mean the physical construction of some kind of a shelter or accommodation, but it can also mean a wider location or region, or even country or culture or traditions, habits, familiarity in a wider sense. And partly this stems from the fact that I have lived abroad for nearly a third of my life. So I was born and raised in Finland, but since then I've lived in a number of different countries, and currently I live in Australia. And so that's where this interest towards the meaning of home and familiarity sort of emerges for me. And what do I talk about today? Basically, first I thought I could define or at least describe what I mean by aesthetic practices of residing. And then I'll move on to my ongoing study. So I'm currently undertaking a study, a qualitative empirical data sourcing, where I target other Finnish people who live abroad. So I've called them expat Finns here, but it can be any kind of migrating Finn, so it doesn't, because expat often means somebody who's temporarily overseas, but I mean anybody who lives abroad, a Finnish person. And a bit later I'll briefly explain why I particularly targeted this population. And my third part of this talk is going to be about my findings, which can be divided into different notions of time and temporality or rhythms, and the arc of experience is aesthetic experience in this case, and notions of authenticity. And I'll talk more about all of those when we get there. So at this stage, this is more of a table of contents. So what do I mean by aesthetic practices? We already this morning heard from Pauline a bit of an introduction of our project as a whole. And lately, Pauline has been writing and talking about this matter in different avenues and publications. And this is my paraphrasing of what I understand aesthetic practices to mean, or what's useful concept in my project. So leisurely everyday activities undertaken for aesthetic enjoyment. And so basically this could cover nearly everything. So obviously the purpose is not to claim that everything is aesthetic practice, but more to pay attention to different ways of doing everyday things, whether it's chores or hobbies, that they can be undertaken in a way where the stance or attitude is aesthetic, or the person pays a bit more attention to aesthetic enjoyment. And aesthetic practices, in my thinking, also mean that means and ends are equal in value, meaning that the quality of doing something or the manner of doing something is as important as the end goal. So it's not only one or the other, but they are both meaningful during the process. And also aesthetic practices are somewhere between a habit and a hobby often. So it's not, or they could be just habitual ways of doing things, or they could be creative or artistic or artisanal hobbies. But I found in my interviews and surveys that often it's somewhere in between, in a bit of a gray area, that's actually a bit difficult to verbalize. And I'll get back to that a bit later again. And other useful idea, I think, comes from Thi Nguyen. His talk about process arts and object arts. So he, as you probably are familiar with, he discusses this separation or difference between perhaps the more traditional understanding in the Western field of aesthetics about object arts, which is what it says. So basically artworks or some kinds of objects or items that we treat as art or source of aesthetic enjoyment or engagement. Whereas according to him, process art is something that's more of a framework, perhaps a bit abstract. So it could be, for example, rules of a game or some kind of social rules, like a social dance, where the art, the aesthetic experience arises from the actions of the person who engages in that activity or operates within the framework. So the person appreciates their own actions within that given scaffolding. And also, Yuriko Saito has strongly influenced my thinking with her writing about how our relationship with material world affects our quality of life. So basically she writes a lot about the quality and importance of design of everyday items and everyday environments, so urban environments and landscapes, for example. And recently she's been talking about aesthetics of care, meaning that the way we conduct ourselves or choose to operate or choose to treat our, each other or other living beings or other items, objects, the material world, they all have a profound influence to how we experience our world, so the quality of life and sense of being in the world. So within these three parameters, or I've been using these three parameters as sort of signposts for my own thinking at this stage. And so some details about my ongoing study. So basically I've been doing a survey and interviews targeting Finnish people who live abroad. And I did not narrow that down in a way, so I haven't been sort of pre-qualifying anybody. I haven't said that you have to have lived abroad for at least X number of years. So basically anybody who identifies as an expat Finn has been invited to reply or to participate. And I conducted a survey online that garnered 204 respondents late last year. And I've been doing thematic interviews, either face-to-face or online, with 10 informants. And our discussions revolve around hobbies that relate to the sense of home or homeliness. So basically what I'm trying to do is I'm trying not to give a too detailed definition of aesthetic practices to these people that I'm interviewing, because I'd like to get an understanding of how they sort of conceive this notion. So we're talking about or what I'm asking them about is habits and hobbies related to the home and making the home, which have included, for example, interior decoration and cleaning and tidying, organizing, decluttering, and cooking and baking, handicrafts, gardening, and collecting items. So actually it seems that expats, at least Finnish expats, are quite interested in collecting Finnish design, so especially glassware and textiles. So that sort of emerged from my data. And why I chose expats? So obviously partly because of my own lived experience. So it's something that has made me realize that displacement or becoming, when you become removed from your familiar surroundings and context, culture, country, language, that can make these, well, traditions and cultural practices, but also your own personal habitual ways of doing things and aesthetic practices more prominent. So it, basically, they can become more noticed and intentional, more conscious, because when you are surrounded by sort of familiar flow of the everyday, it's easy to just do things as you have always done things. But when you become rooted and transplanted to someplace else, the things that you thought that are just the regular part of your everyday might suddenly become something that's actually perhaps difficult to do, or you have to justify it a bit more. You might have to explain it to your new family or new friends, new social circles, or you just can't do it anymore because you can't get the ingredients or materials, or somehow the environment changes so drastically that whatever you thought is normal and everyday and important to you no longer is, it's no longer available to you, or you have to go through more effort to keep it going. And if I jump into findings, being mindful of time, obviously there's quite a few themes and sort of ideas that arise from this data, but I chose three themes to discuss today. So one is about time or temporality and time algorithms. And one of my so-called hypotheses before I started this survey was based on my previous research and previous just lived experience, was this notion that perhaps generational cycles and annual cycles would become quite important to people, or they would want to discuss those, meaning that often migrants get this strong sense of wanting to transfer their habits, skills, traditions, preferences, ways of doing things from... Oh, what's happening? Oh, sure. So basically, migrants get this strong sense of wanting to transfer traditions and ways of doing things from our previous generations to future generations. So basically from their parents to their children, or from grandparents or ancestors, in a more abstract sense, to future generations. So these kinds of things did become confirmed. So I did find that people do think it's quite meaningful and important to them. So many of my informants kept reporting that they do want to keep learning or practicing traditional ways of cooking, for example, so that they can teach that to their children, even if they didn't have children. So they were sort of preparing the future eventuality that someday they might need to teach it to somebody, so they want to be prepared. And also this sense of Finnishness seems to be quite strongly attached to annual cycles. So regardless of where you are on this globe and the country and climate, people tend to associate what was familiar to them in their childhood as something that's authentic to them. So they feel that, for example, Christmas needs to be midwinter. And even, for example, in Australia, it's midsummer. Finnish people would still do all the wintery activities to make it feel like the authentic winter. And I find it really interesting that nobody in my data set, at least so far, has questioned this practice. So they feel that they are maintaining the authenticity of the seasonal celebration, even though in this new culture and new environment, it's quite inauthentic in a way, because it does not fit in any sensible way in that culture or temperatures. So anyhow, this is something that I expected to find, and I did find it. But then maybe the surprising finding at this stage was that how important very small things and very mundane things are to people. So for example, a number of respondents told that they have a particular way of folding laundry, especially sheets. And so that seems to be something that very, very basic everyday activities become laced with meaning, and they sort of become symbols of one's ancestry or symbols of honoring your family. So yeah, a great number of people did report that they just have to, for example, iron their sheets because grandma used to do it too, and it's just wrong if they don't do it. And it's that was quite surprising to me, that how strong this internalization of certain types of activities is. So it's the intertwining of memory and symbolism and aesthetic pleasure was perhaps stronger than I expected to see or hear. But in the new findings area, I'd say that this arc of experience that people report, so this was new to me to know that this is how many informants think. So basically, normally when we talk about aesthetic experience, or at least in the sense of how John Dewey originally described aesthetic experience, so it has a beginning and an end, and obviously the art or the actual event. So it's the consummated experience in a way. But a lot of my informants kept talking about more stretched experience, so it actually includes planning and preparing and the actual event and sharing or remembering afterwards. So this could apply for example, preparing for an annual celebration, so let's say Christmas again, or some kind of Sunday meal, for example, a bit more special, more effort put into it. So people would start quite early on to plan and prepare, thinking what kind of a menu they're planning to serve, what kind of table settings they'll prepare. Some told that they find it difficult that in the new country it's not possible to forage table decorations in nature, because people in Finland might go and maybe pick some branches and flowers to have natural decorations from nature to sort of complete the preferred look. And now that's not possible anymore. So basically, the being in a different country forces them to rethink this planning and preparation part. And it seemed to be quite important to informants that they are not willing to forego or not willing to just stop doing it. So they are actually willing to go to great lengths to keep this same arc still existing in the new environment as well. And sharing and remembering afterwards could mean, for example, sharing pictures of the event, or in the case of, for example, making handicrafts, it could be sharing your final product with the group. So people might belong into some kind of knitting group or rug weaving group. So they like to discuss and sort of compare and talk about the products afterwards. And it seems that this anticipation and visualization and imagination that link to the planning and preparing stage was actually quite important and valuable to informants. So they think that it's an essential part of aesthetic enjoyment. So before you even start doing anything, before you actually start the process or make anything by hand, just the imagining the outcome or planning the right ingredients or right colors to use had surprisingly strong importance. And I personally thought that it's interesting because people were talking about quite mundane matters. So this could be, for example, again, a seasonal celebration or perhaps maybe a spring cleaning. So it's not like an artistic project as such. So people wouldn't call it artistic, but yet how they approach it is actually very creative and artisanal or artistic even. And also the memories and learning afterwards were held in high value. So many people discussed about this, the importance of learning. So when, again, for example, when you make some new handicrafts, you weave door wreaths, for example, or decorations, table decorations, the ability to learn and share was very important to people. And it just seems that this joy or creative resourcefulness that people draw from their everyday activities, when these everyday activities are undertaken in a way that's interweaving with aesthetic practices or becomes an aesthetic practice, it seems that it really adds quite a bit of meaning to people's lives, which is obviously nice to hear personally, I think. And moving on to this authenticity bit, so my third finding that I'm discussing today is about authenticity. And here I need to give a bit of a disclaimer that by authenticity, I mean these informants' sense of self. So what they report, how they feel their identity being authentic through certain types of actions or certain ways of being. So it's not at this stage, this term is not grounded on any particular theory, but it's more just a label for people's own reported experience. So basically, all my informants, so that was over 200 people that I surveyed and 10 people that I interviewed in more depth. So they all did indicate or express that they find aesthetic practices valuable, meaningful, and important to the sense of authentic identity. So basically, pretty much everyone said in one stage or another that they feel that if they stopped doing these practices, so for example, decluttering in certain ways, or if they stopped preparing Sunday meals in certain ways, they would no longer be the same person. So they really strongly tie their sense of identity with these particular ways of doing things. And also, aesthetic practices appear to be different from a hobby or a habit to my respondents. So basically, a hobby was understood to be something that's quite official in a way. So it might be scheduled or outcome focused and part of one's external persona, meaning that people would think that if they have a hobby, say yoga, that would be something that they talk about, they express it, they might express it in social media, for example. Whereas these aesthetic practices might be something that are more private. So they are very important, but they're not necessarily advertised or expressed publicly. And also aesthetic practice is not a habit as such either, because a habit was equated with sort of mindless routine or something that's done without thinking and without trace. So it's something that's fleeting, you just do it because you do it every day. Whereas aesthetic practices are clearly more conscious and more intentional, even though they are habitual ways of doing things. And what I found as a challenge for myself as a researcher and for my respondents is that there clearly is some vocabulary lacking to discuss and describe this whole phenomenon. So basically people don't know that it's difficult for people to discuss the concept of aesthetic practices because it's a new term in a way, so they don't quite understand what it means even though they grasp it when we discuss it. But because it is somewhere between a habit and a hobby, but it's not quite neither necessarily. So I found that people had a tendency to say that, well, I weave rugs every week, but it's not my hobby. And I found it interesting that there is this difference or separation between thinking that it can't be a hobby because it's not happening at the gym outside of the house, or it's not scheduled to a certain time. So these are more integral part of who a person feels they are. So basically, a lot of people just responded that this is who I am. I am a person who knits, or I am a person who collects glassware, or I'm a person who always goes to secondhand shops to try and find finished design in UK. So basically, they don't label it as an activity, they label it as a personality trait in a way. And some even said that it's a personality trait that they have inherited. So they have inherited this personality trait of knitting from their grandma. And it's interesting because obviously, psychologically speaking, it can't be. But yeah, it to me, it just sort of shows that it's very integrally part of sense of identity and this perceived sense of authenticity. And to wrap up, just quickly show that what other themes emerged or where else this research could go or will go in the future. Because some other matters that were raised in my data sets were the interweaving of aesthetics and ethics. So especially self-care and environmental ethics are matters that respondents felt quite strongly about, or at least they discussed these matters often. So aesthetic practice and self-care seem to link quite quintessentially together, and also environmental ethics in a way that people might feel that this, for example, the foraging that I mentioned, that they want to pick ingredients from nature either to eat or to decorate with. And that relates to more environmental or ecological consideration as well. And quite a few indicated that their aesthetic practices are a bit of a counterbalance for a world that requires focus on productivity and efficiency. Whereas when you can focus on your own creativity and your own appreciation of your own actions, aesthetic field, it has more to do with self-determination and self-actualization than productivity, even though you're aiming towards some kind of an end goal, for example, when you're making handicrafts. And lastly, I think that there's an interesting difference emerging in this data set between leisure and spare time, meaning that spare time is understood as something that's just time off from work, so it's time that you can spare, very literally. Whereas leisure and recreation have more to do with restoration, so it's more about intentionally spending your time in ways that are recharging, not just relaxing or not just resting. So it's more about doing something with your days and your skills to do and undergo and become in a way. So that wraps up my findings for now. Very abruptly, but that happened. So
thank you.